What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Going the Distance podcast, presented by ImmaculateSports.com. Twitter's @ImmacSports.
Instagram is also @ImmacSports.
TikTok, YouTube, Immaculate Sports. It's episode 215. We've got our World Series matchup, Dodgers-Yankees, just like we all wanted. We'll get into that. We'll open the show with the World Series preview, but a lot more to. The second half of the show, we'll be doing the full NBA season preview too. So this should be a good one.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of different sports involved in today's episode, of course, with the World Series. Skyler, we'll talk more about some other stuff within baseball. But we got the NBA season preview. We have our top 15 power rankings check-in in the NFL, which will be fun, of course. And then we also got college football at halftime and some of the usual stuff that goes along with that. For the opener, like we always do, best thing that we saw from this past week. There wasn't a lot of good, especially as a Raider fan this past week. So I decided to go with the same thing I went with last week, at Brock Bowers and his continued dominance in his first season in the NFL. On Sunday against the Rams, he had 10 catches for 93 yards on 14 targets. Doing this between the two quarterbacks, Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell, of course. Going into Monday night, he led the NFL in receptions. He now does not due to how Chris Godwin played on Monday night. But prayers up for Chris Godwin, I guess, because that ankle was completely sideways yesterday. And we obviously know that he's out for the season. But yeah, I guess I'll kind of hit on what's going on with the Raiders right now, kind of my opinion of the stuff going on. I've said this numerous times are friends, but I don't think I've said on here. I'm hoping for the team to lose every game now at this point. That's exactly where we're at. I don't see any benefit in, you know, us winning a couple of games or something like that to just, I don't know, boost team morale. Pretty much every player is not going to be here when we are succeeding, especially on the offensive side. So it doesn't hurt me if they perform bad right now. Obviously Brock is the opposite of that. And maybe even Alexander Mattison, who's been a bright spot for us in the first seven games of the season. Maybe he's, you know, has the ability to stick around and could be, you know, a pairing to whatever running back that we want to bring in the off season or draft a guy or whatever that goes on there. Quarterback position, obviously now got a bit more interesting as well too. Aiden O'Connell out for 4 to 6 weeks with a broken thumb that he sustained in the first quarter of Sunday's game. We brought in Desmond Ridder from the Cardinals practice squad. He will sit behind Minshew to start at least. And then maybe he'll, you know, get some starts in there, whatever. He started 13 games for the Falcons last year. Did not perform great. And everybody's like, well, Desmond Ridder's bad. I've been a fan of this guy since he was in college. That's probably something I've said on the show while he was in college, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, if you go back into the episodes. But obviously we're not, you know, looking at the next franchise quarterback here. Just, you know, give something else to spice it up and just hope and pray to God that maybe it was just 100% of Arthur Smith's fault of why he sucked last year, which could be possible. You never know.
The Terrace Marshall connection.
Yeah. Terrace Marshall as well too. He's guy that we picked up, but we also got Trayvon Wesco. That's a name that I know you like, former Jet, but gonna be a long season, and I'm prepared for it because that happens quite often for us.
Yeah, I don't want to get into the Jets season because it's such a disaster, so I went in a different direction. Yes, the Yankees won the ALCS in just 5 games against Cleveland, but the series did not disappoint. Every game came down to the wire, and the ALCS is in general rarely disappointing. I was asking my dad the same thing the other night when Juan Soto came up, right before the homer, actually, if he felt the same way. He's like, oh, maybe it's not just because, you know, our favorite team's in the American League. The NL is usually a wilder wild card round. It's in the name compared to the legendary championship series with Boston, Houston, New York, Tampa going 6-7 games. Anyways, Yankees are back. Incredible series. Unlikely hero stepped up until it was Juan Soto. So I did enjoy watching it.
Yeah, and that segues us perfectly into what we're going to talk about now with our World Series preview. Obviously, it's all set up. First game is on Monday, October 25th, between the Yankees and the Dodgers. This is exactly the playoff that I, or World Series that I predicted when we did our World Series or playoff predictions a couple of weeks now at this point. I will say something on the CS's real quick is it did feel like that Yankees Guardian series, even though it was 4-1 compared to the NLCS that was 4-2. I felt a lot closer in that. And that's not really a shot on the Mets or anything like that on the National League side. It just felt like the Dodgers were so good. And their offense was ridiculous. They put up, I'm trying to find it right now with the actual run. They put up 9 in game 1, 3 in game 2, 8 in game 3, 10 in game 4, 6 in game 5, and then 10 again in game 6. So they scored at least 8 runs in 4 of the 6 games of the series, and every single time that they did that, they won the game. And when you have the bullpen that the Dodgers do, that's pretty ridiculous to say. So that'll, you know, get us into what we got going on Friday and hopefully the next week and get into November baseball. I'll just ask you the question straight up. Who do you think is going to win the World Series? Who do you think is going to win the MVP of the World Series? Because we got, you know, two winners of the AL and NL, presumably MVPs this year in this series as well, too. And then we can kind of go past that and some other stuff as well, too.
Yeah, in hindsight, I probably should have seen this coming, too. But after what happened last season, I felt like I had to try to find the undervalued team. And I thought that was going to be the Phillies. I had them beating the Yankees in 6 games, so I'm not going to change too much here. I got the Dodgers in the same amount of games. It's a boring pick to pick the Dodgers, right? But at this point in this postseason, Shohei Ohtani, over 800 with runners in scoring position. It's been all Ohtani, Betts, Edman, and Muncy. So I expect a lot of those guys against the Yankee bullpen, outside of Mr. Changeup, Tommy Canley, excuse me. It's a tough one because it doesn't sound like how it's spelled, but he threw 28 straight changeups. He's been the only good reliever. I got Shohei Ohtani as my MVP. Look out for the usual suspects too. There's a reason these are the highest two paid rosters in the league, right? Everyone's ready.
Yeah. Like I said, this is the World Series that I predicted once we did our playoff prediction show a few weeks back, and I'm going to stick with the same prediction that I had when we did that, and that was Dodgers in 6 games, Shohei Ohtani wins World Series MVP. I kind of wanted to make a niche pick again with the World Series MVP because that's something that worked for me in the past, of course. And so I was thinking about maybe Andy Pajares or something like that. But I'll decide to go with the $700 million man instead. And I think it kind of just it goes down to the same stuff that how they beat the Mets. I know the starting pitching is maybe a bit better for the Yankees than their New York foes, but the bullpen isn't better right now, I'd say. And that Dodgers lineup is as hot as it could possibly be. Maybe, you know, the 6 or 7 day rest period that they're going to have going into the series can change that. I don't think it will. Dodgers seem like the best team in baseball right now, and I feel like they're going to win this World Series in the first year that Shohei Ohtani is a Dodger.
Which is crazy.
Another conversation with this World Series is kind of just like the markets around it as well too. Like this is the two most recognizable brands within baseball on an international scale. You have your two most well-known players, Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani. I think that's something going to be really big for them. Will be, and hopefully they market well over this week. I haven't seen too much quite yet, but this is a big opportunity to grow the game. Something that they've just been really bad at over the last 40 years, you know, so our entire lifetimes. So it will be interesting to see how that goes. If you don't have anything to add, I'll go right into the player pitcher rookie of the week, though, since we're staying on the baseball topic.
I have a closing statement based off of what you just said. I understand why people are upset that it's these two teams, but, you know, at the end of the day, this is going to be one of those World Series we look back on because all of the Hall of Famers that are going to be playing this weekend. So I'm excited.
Yeah, there should be a lot of hype around it. Should be a lot of first time fans watching the games. And I think that'll be really good for the game, even though some of the purists really didn't want it to be these two teams in the World Series. But moving into our player pitcher rookie in the week, as formerly mentioned, our player of the week, Skyler, there are some candidates here. Who did you choose?
I'm going to go with Giancarlo Stanton, the ALCS hero, 3 big homers in their last 3 games. The highest OPS in either of the CS series at a 1.4. This is exactly who they needed to step up for them. Cleveland had a similar strategy. They had Big Christmas, David Fry. But the difference is we're talking about a former MVP here. He's always been capable, and he came through.
Yeah, I get went with Giancarlo Stanton as my player of the week as well, too. Only three hits, but all three of those hits were definitely massive, and I think they're probably all at least 110 miles per hour off the bat. What we're seeing from playoff G right now is pretty remarkable. And I guess I could talk about this because it kind of segues in perfectly. This is possibly the Kodak moment for Giancarlo Stanton, not just World Series, but Hall of Fame level career. We've talked about this in the past where he kind of just needs to get to 500 homers and he's going to get in, because I believe everyone who has hit 500 homers that hasn't been suspended for steroids has gotten in to the Hall of Fame. And a World Series ring obviously helps that. He'd have the MVP to go along with it, several All-Stars. And now it's looking like even more and more, the more that we watch him, that he's going to be able to play into his late 30s. And that's exactly what he would need in order to get to that 500 homers. I believe he's at like 420, 430 around now. But a playoff run like this is something that the voters have always valued. It's one of the biggest reasons why Corey Seager has a chance to be a Hall of Famer when he's all said and done, because he's two-time World Series MVP and has one of the greatest postseason resumes that we've seen in the game, especially since the 2000s. And I'm just happy for Giancarlo Stanton, because a couple of years ago, this was not the narrative around him. It was, is he going to be able to play more than 20 games in the season? Is he going to not strike out all the time? And I know still the, you know, maybe the speed offensively isn't there, but he's navigated that about as well as he possibly can. And just happy for a guy who's dealt with a lot of shit over the past few years. Mm-hmm. On to pitcher of the week.
I'm going to go with what I thought was the best outing from a starter this week. Not a lot of them, but it's Walker Buehler. He only went four, but this is how things are done now in postseason baseball. Four shutout innings, six strikeouts in Citi Field, and it was an 8-0 win over the Mets. They had no shot at the early start, and that's kind of been their thing this season. So Walker on the mounds, they get shut down. He's my pitcher of the week.
Yeah, Walker Buehler was great in that game. And that game, I actually took the over, because I thought it was, I want to say it was Sebi versus Walker in that game. And both those guys have been a little bit shaky in their postseason starts. And over ended up hitting because Muncy hit in a homer in the ninth inning. But just how good Walker Buehler was really surprised me. His sweepers and his curveballs in that were like, maybe it's just a Citi Field camera as well helping him out, because it's a really good camera angle. But he was throwing some nasty stuff, and I was pretty surprised at how good his stuff was playing. But I went in a different direction for my pitcher of the week. I went with Blake Treinen, one of the more high leverage relievers that we've seen from the Dodgers this postseason. 4 1/3 innings, only four hits allowed, one earned run, seven strikeouts, zero walks, and 1-for-1 in save opportunities. We've seen Blake Treinen firsthand be as good as he possibly can be as a reliever when he was with the A's and won the AL Reliever of the Year Award back in 2018. He feels like that same type of guy right now. His stuff is nasty. The Dodgers believe in him, and that's why he's, you know, getting the ball in the ninth inning of these games instead of an Evan Phillips or a Michael Kopech or whoever it may be. Blake Treinen's been the best reliever on the best team in baseball, and that's why they're in the World Series. So one of the reasons why they're in the World Series. How about Rookie of the Week? There's still a few guys having some contributions, maybe some than others. But what do you think?
Yeah, not the widest group of players here. I was hoping to have Hunter Gaddis up here if he got the win in Game 5, but obviously didn't go his way. So I'll go with Kyle Manzardo of Cleveland. They're not moving on, but Stephen Vogt wanted to go heavy on the lefties. Manzardo came through big time in those last three games, 4-for-7 with a walk. That's good enough for me.
Yeah, he was a candidate for me. Yamamoto was a candidate for me. But I went with Big Christmas, John Kempsey, Noel. He only had one hit.
Yeah.
But we all know exactly what that one hit was. It was homer to tie it in the ninth and the only game that the Guardians won in the ALCS. So I think that homer for John Kempsey definitely deserves to be Rookie of the Week, in my opinion. Moving on to the NFL side of it now, our Player of the Week, Skyler, who did you choose here?
I'm sorry, Saquon. Probably was a lock for the Immaculate Sports Player of the Week before Monday Night Football, but Lamar played last night. 5 touchdowns, a perfect passer rating, 40-plus points in Tampa. The score looks much closer than the game we watched, the onside kick, the backups coming in, but this was an absolute beatdown by Lamar last night.
Yeah. If it was story of the week, Saquon definitely gets that nod. But with how Lamar played last night, it's impossible to not choose him. 17 for 22, 281 through the air, 5 passing touchdowns, 52 rushing yards on 9 attempts. Just did what he does, and that's exactly why he's won 2 MVPs and has a good chance to head for his 3rd if Josh Allen ever throws an interception again, which is crazy to think. On to defensive player of the week. Some interesting choices here. Who do you choose?
Yeah, I'm actually going to go with a guy who lost in a blowout this weekend because Dexter Lawrence deserves his flowers. The big Giants D tackle added 2 more sacks to the league high 9 from the interior, which is pretty nuts for a guy who gets double teamed every single snap. I thought the Giants had a shot to beat Philly. I saw that you did too on the picks, especially after the defense shut him down for the first half. But obviously, Saquon broke it open. 7-3 turned into 28-3 very quickly. But great start to the season for Dexter, looking like an all-pro first team.
100%, especially from the nose tackle position. What he's done is pretty ridiculous. Maybe kind of the same blindness that I had when Pat Surtain had a good game. I went with Beanie Bishop as the defensive player of the week. I know one of the picks was kind of just bounced right into his hands, but to have 2 interceptions on Sunday Night Football as a rookie is pretty impressive, especially when the Jets have the receiving core that they do. So I went with Beanie Bishop as my defensive player of the week.
Short memory.
Yep, exactly. On to rookie of the week. Who'd you choose here?
Yeah, I'm going with your guy, Brock Bowers. 10 for 93. He just gets wide open all the time. Even with Adams being gone from the equation the past couple of weeks, the volume for Bowers over these next couple of years is going to put him on a very special path for his career. No tight ends are getting 10-plus catches a game like he will.
Yeah. I like that a lot. But I went with Drake May as my rookie of the week. I think he played really well. I know they lost by 16 points to a team that is not that good. But look at who Drake May had around him in this game. Who was he handing the ball off to? Antonio Gibson and Ramondre Stevenson?
Michael Hasty.
Pretty mid. Who is he throwing to? Not Jalen Polk, not DeMario Douglas. And those guys are still pretty bottom of the barrel when it comes to NFL starters. Like he didn't have a lot of guys to throw to, and he came out with a 26 for 37, 276 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, and 18 rushing yards. I think it was a pretty good game for the New England rookie quarterback, and maybe get him a wide receiver or two. I don't know. That usually tends to help out how your quarterback plays. On to our NFL power rankings, our top 15 that we do bi-weekly, of course. I only have one team that was on my 15 last time that is not on here. Do you have anybody that you want to talk about before I talk about that one thing?
Yeah, Dallas was number 10 for me. They don't belong here anymore. And Cincinnati's just on the outside right now. Just one more reasonable win because everyone's going to beat Cleveland.
Dallas is the only team that I had off. So they were at 13 for me last time. They are now unranked.
Yeah.
I don't know. Says that. On the number 15, Skyler, who was the last team on your list?
We'll start it off with the Falcons at 4-3. They're dropping down a bit here from number 8. Really tough loss against Seattle. They just came out flat. But a win in Tampa this week could skyrocket everything. It's not over for them.
Yeah, number 15 for me, I went with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, down 6 spots in the last rankings, and I really think the injuries are the biggest reason why they're not higher on this list. It's impossible to just say, oh, it was a loss last night, and that's all it is, because Chris Godwin's out for the year, and Mike Evans is out for 3 weeks at least. I think they said week 11 is the earliest possible time he can come back. Just not good news for Tampa Bay. They have, you know, some other guys that could possibly step up, but it's just not going to be the same level offense. And when you don't have that offense and you're going against some of the offenses that you will be going against in the NFL, it's going to be tougher to win games. So sitting at 4-3, I will have Tampa Bay as the number 15 team. Number 14.
14, I got the Niners. They're going to stay put at their spot because most of us knew Kansas City wasn't really possible with the circumstances San Francisco's been under. But either way, it's all about the injuries now. You got to add Ayuk and Hufanga to the long list of really bad injuries. Now Debo was in the hospital. If Jordan Mason can't get it in a rhythm again, this team is going to be toast because they don't have a downfield passing game. But for now, Kansas City's not enough to bump them up the list for me.
Yeah. Number 14 for me, the same team as you chose, San Francisco 49ers, the only under 500 team that's still on this list. So I think that kind of says what my internal opinion is about them. They moved down three spots, but they still find themselves on this list despite not having a good record. Sunday was a telling game. I know we all kind of expected them to lose to the Chiefs. I mean, it's the Kansas City Chiefs. Who's going to win them in that scenario? But as someone who's been a big believer in Brock Purdy the entire time that he's played, especially this past year, it just wasn't there. And I know he didn't have his all pros around him, but he still had George Kittle. He still had Jordan Mason. Like, there's still weapons there. It's not, you know, what he's used to, but there's still guys he can throw to. And he just didn't do a good job of doing that on Sunday. Now it got a lot harder because Brandon Ayuk is out for the year. Deebo Samuel is sick with pneumonia, but he does have Ricky Pearsall back. He does hopefully have Juwan Jennings back this next week. So it's interesting to see. I will say on the defensive side, Malik Mustafa,
yeah,
who got hit by Patrick Mahomes for that touchdown. I hate that that's the big play that's being surrounded around him right now because he's a stud. He's really good, and I think he's going to be around for a long time in that Niners defense. Number 13.
13, I got the Buccaneers. I only dropped them down one spot because I just want to wait and see what happens. Evans and Godwin are gone, obviously. But the three-headed monster at running back has been really good this year. Baker, outside of the third quarter last night, has looked really good. I'm not ready to write him off yet. And luckily, we have that head-to-head matchup on Sunday, Atlanta-Tampa Bay. It should tell us a lot about Tampa's offense.
Yeah. So your 13 is my 15. My 15 is your 13. And our 14s are the same because I have Atlanta as the number 13 spot as well. They moved down seven spots in my rankings from the last time. Just a disappointing loss on Sunday against Seattle. I really didn't expect them to lose that game. I definitely did not expect them to kind of get blown out in that game, especially with DK getting hurt in the fourth quarter as well, too. It just kind of surprised me, so to speak. And that took a big hit in the rankings. So they moved down seven spots. I think they'll be fine in the long term. It helps some, of course, that Chris Godwin and Mike Evans got hurt because that'll make Sunday's game a lot easier. I still feel like they have a very good chance to win the division now with those injuries. So this isn't the last of the Falcons, of course. And it's only week eight, so it's definitely not. Number 12.
Number 12, I'm going with the Seahawks. They actually moved down one spot after the big Atlanta win, which was massive. If only they didn't collapse against San Francisco, they might be way higher here because Geno still leads the league in passing. DK's injury upsets me as an owner of him in fantasy, but it seems like something that he can play through. So I'm not going to freak out yet with Seattle.
Number 12 for me is going to be the team that was unranked 2 weeks ago. So the only team that's unranked on my entire board from last time, that was the Pittsburgh Steelers, who are 5-2 right now. Usually they have a good record and I just kind of ignore them. It became impossible to ignore with what I saw on Sunday nights. And I know they're playing a Jets team that we've talked about has some issues, but what they did was pretty damn impressive. And what we saw from Russell Wilson, I thought was really good as well too. I think he's the perfect quarterback for George Pickens. And I think we're going to see the fruit of his labor really come alive over these next few weeks with the deep ball ability that Russell Wilson has. Just is perfect for George Pickens. That's exactly the type of wide receiver that he is. We saw him make, he had five catches. I think what, four of them were on jump balls. Like that's exactly what he was doing. Najee Harris seems to have a new life in his legs, which I've never really seen before from a running back, which is good to see as just a Najee Harris fan in general. Their defense we know is good. It's always going to be good with Mike Tomlin around and they got some studs on that side as well too. So Pittsburgh, I don't think is going anywhere. I don't think they're a top tier team in the NFL. I don't think they're competing for a Super Bowl, but I definitely think they're in a very good spot for a playoff, you know, game or two. On to number 11.
Yeah, at 11 is where I got the Steelers. I did have them 15 last week, so it's a plus four. I'm not really sure yet if Sunday night was just the Jets being a sorry team or if Pittsburgh really is a contender, but hey, they're 5-2. They get the bump. I think the real litmus test is going to be at Washington in 2 weeks. or at Cincinnati December 1st. I really want to see him play Cincinnati. Obviously, I've been begging to throw him in my top 15. They haven't really earned it yet, but Pittsburgh gets their spot until then.
Yeah. So we kind of match each other here because I have Seattle as my number 11 team that moved down one spot from the last rankings. Good win on Sunday against the Falcons. Obviously, losing to the Niners on Thursday Night Football before that was what kind of hurt the ranking more. I thought that was a game they should win. The beat up Niners team, they were pretty much healthy. They should have won that game, and they just threw out an egg on that Thursday night. Obviously, Thursday night games, though, can be weird, so I'm not taking it too harshly there. Still 4-3 and in a good spot now, leading the division with the Niners being at 3-4. So down one spot, but still, I'd say a net positive in everything. On to number 10.
I actually have my first unranked team and only for today, Chicago Bears, 4-2. Caleb Williams has been on a tear these past 2 weeks, and they deserve to be in the conversation now, especially if they beat Washington. Wow. You know, we know they had the better roster, but if Caleb is looking this good and if he could do it against other teams than Jacksonville, then hey, they belong in the top 10.
Yeah. Moving up five spots for me, it's to the number 10 spot is also the Chicago Bears. So we're pretty much perfect right now. I was a big believer of this team going into the season. I thought Caleb was going to be better than what at least a lot of the casual fans are saying. But this whole team of the Chicago Bears hinged on how good Caleb Williams was going to be. If he was going to be bad, they weren't going to go anywhere. If he was going to be good, this team has very high, you know, hopes. And we saw that on not this past week because they had a bye, but the week before that in London against the Jags. And I know it's the Jags, but he played so good in that game. And I think that was a really good game for him to see his weapons and realize that all the stuff that he has around him and utilize it very well. And I thought he did that in that game. I think we're going to see more of that from Caleb Williams in the future. We have a good hopeful matchup if we see Jaden Daniels play on Sunday. That would be really good to see those two quarterbacks go at it. But I like this Bears roster a lot, and I think they're on the up and up. Number 9, hopefully it gets a little bit less boring here because we've been pretty scratched so far.
It definitely will, because I know you had this team higher than me. It's the Eagles. They're finally in the top 10, first time this season for me, and they get the +4 because they've taken care of business. 2-0 since the bye, despite the slow start. They're clearly in a better position than Dallas, so they get to come into the top 10.
My number 9 team, moving up 3 spots, is also the Philadelphia Eagles. I think I graded them pretty harshly after their loss to the Buccaneers and having the bye a few weeks ago. Since then, they, you know, didn't have the greatest game against the Browns, but they had a really clean, probably the most clean game that we've seen from the Eagles since their Super Bowl run year in 2022. Hurts looked good, but Saquon Barkley, when you give him the ball and you have the ability to run the ball like how he's been running it, it's pretty special. And I think that makes him a very legitimate team once we get down to it, if Jalen Hurts decided to play some of his best ball again. Number 8, we'll see how this goes.
I don't think we have it anymore because I have the Commanders going down a spot, actually. It's not because of them necessarily. It's because another NFC team has been really rising up these past couple weeks. Jaden Daniels held his own in Baltimore. I think you're laughing, so we might have the same pick, actually. But the injury is concerning, right? I lost my spot. Hold on. I'm sorry. Looked like some broken ribs, but I'm not a doctor, and they're not going to tell us until Friday. So, number 1 pick, Caleb Williams. This is a massive game.
Number 8 for me, moving down one spot, the Washington Commanders. Wow. The loss against the Ravens obviously sucked, but how they held in there was pretty showing of what this team's real identity is. We saw them bounce back perfectly against the Panthers, a 40-7 victory. The injury to Daniels is obviously bad, or it sucks to have happen, but I don't think it's a, you know, crazy long-term injury, maybe a week or two, especially with the ribs. They lose to the Bears without Jaden Daniels. I'm not going to care, so it's not going to affect me too much. They're up 5-2. It's way better than what I could have expected with this team. I think I had them winning 4 games the entire year when the season started. So they've been really good, and Jaden Daniels has been amazing. So is Mariota. He was really good as well.
Yes,
too.
Yeah.
Number seven.
Buffalo Bills, also down one spot. We both mentioned it before. The roster is maybe the worst one we've seen since 2017 before Josh Allen, but they made no excuses. Josh Allen's been perfect. They got Amari Cooper now. They're about to run away with the AFC East way earlier than they thought they were going to.
Number seven for me, moving up one spot, is the Buffalo Bills as well, too. So we're staying identical here, which is kind of crazy. Two good weeks for the Bills. I think they didn't have a bye in there. I don't know what I'm talking about. But they look good right now. Back-to-back wins Monday night against the Jets, and then a blowout win against the Titans that I thought could have been a slight trap game originally. They look good. Josh Allen looks to be the MVP right now. They just added Amari Cooper. I think the defense is getting better as well. I said this was the worst Buffalo team in years when we went into the season. I might be thinking the exact opposite right now. But they tend to do this. They tend to have these runs where they look like the best team in the league, and they can take down the Chiefs, and they never do it. But they look like they got a chance right now, is all I'm saying. Number six, maybe number some six, diversity here.
Going up one spot, the Houston Texans. We talked about this 2 weeks ago. Houston's an elite squad, but they're also very young. And they're allowed to lose a tough one in a tough place. Green Bay, obviously, is a very tough place to play. I'm not going to try to underrate them anymore. They've already beaten Buffalo and Chicago, so I have them above Buffalo.
Similar thinking there. I have Houston going down three spots because I had them at three last time, but they are at the number six spot for me. Losing to the Packers without Nico Collins doesn't affect me as much as what you might think. I know CJ Stroud has one of his worst games as a pro, only had 86 passing yards, but he's going to be fine. You get hiccups. They had a hiccup this week. They won three in a row before that. I think they'll be fine against the Colts this week too. So, Houston's number six. Number five.
Green Bay Packers, they're up from the nine spot. A massive win over those Texans. They made Stroud look silly out there. Jordan Love has looked a little wild since coming back from the injury, but they got to go above Houston and Buffalo, in my opinion.
Green Bay Packers, also number five for me. They move up nine spots. It's three straight wins for them after the bad loss. Or it wasn't a bad loss. They only lost by two by the Vikings 4 weeks ago now at this point. Jordan Love looks good. His weapons look even better. Josh Jacobs is really starting to get going. Their defense has this innate ability to get turnovers. And they look just a very complete team right now in Green Bay. And when you make Lambeau a tough place to play, it becomes a really, really tough place to play. So I like this Packers team a lot. It's 5-2, gets into the number five spot on the rankings. Number four.
The Vikings are going to stay at the four spot, 5-1, despite the loss to Detroit. That's what I expected. The Brian Flores defense is going to shut down most teams this year. Detroit is very good. So that's not their fault. They probably stay around five for a while too. They play the Rams, Indy, Jacksonville, Tennessee, Arizona in the next month. So they're not going anywhere.
I also have the Vikings as the number four spot. I moved them down two from the last time. That's no slack on them. They were a really good football team. I think they showed that on Sunday, even in that loss against the Lions. It's kind of a very true litmus test, I felt like, for them. And they could have just gotten blown out. You know, it could have gone better. It could have gone really good. They were up by 10 points very early in the game. But how that game went, I think was a very good telling of how this Vikings team is. They're going to hang around there. They are a legitimate team. Are they better than the Lions? No. So I think that's how it will be the entire year, as long as everybody stays healthy, that is. Number three.
I did something uncharacteristic here. I dropped the Lions after a win. They drop one spot because they had an incredible two-week stretch, destroying Dallas, stealing one in Minnesota, unlimited options on the offense, but now Jameson Williams is gone. They play Lambeau in 2 weeks, at Lambeau, excuse me, and the Hutchinson injury. There's another team who I'm going to talk about in a second who is just doing the same thing a little better right now.
That team is the Baltimore Ravens that he's going to talk about. I have Baltimore at number three. I thought what we saw last night from Lamar was amazing. What we saw from Lamar this entire season has been amazing. What we're seeing from Derrick Henry at that running back position is ridiculous as well, too. Team that was 0-2 is now 5-2. We had all these questions about them week two after they lost to the Raiders. They've answered every single one with a yes. And Lamar Jackson is playing ridiculous. Their defense is starting to play better as well, too, which I think helps them a ton. So they move up one spot for me to the number three spot. Number two.
Yeah, here's where I have the Ravens. And it's sad. You know, I still think Detroit is by far the top team in the NFC right now. But that's five in a row for Baltimore. It's like they have multiple offensive schemes going on at the same time, and everyone is so confused. You can power run with Henry, downfield passing with the tight ends, the spread RBO game with Flowers and Justice Hill, and then the read option game with Lamar, and they do it all at the same time, all out of the pistol, and it's beautiful.
Yeah. Number two for me is going to be where I slot the Detroit Lions. Big win over the Cowboys that everybody knows about now. And then a big win again against the Vikings on Sunday. It's back-to-back road wins, which I think is even bigger. Titans, Packers, Texans. Packers and Texans, obviously, two games scheduled there. Those are both road games as well, too. One is on Sunday Night Football against the Texans, and then one is, I assume, the game of the week, America's game of the week against the Packers. But this Lions team feels like a Super Bowl team. Yeah. Is how it feels right now. The vibe, just the confidence that they have from top to bottom, whether it's the kicker or the starting quarterback, they're all locked in. They're all very team-oriented. And I think that's something that's very rare to see in the NFL with so many personalities blending in together. So what the Detroit Lions are doing right now, there's got to be number two for me. They move up three spots. And then the number one, we all know exactly who this team is. They've been the number one team for me and Skyler for feels like a decade.
3 years. Yeah, Mahomes didn't play great, but they dominated again two more times. So I had no reason to put Detroit. And that's when I started thinking about, honestly, because of Kansas City, that's why I put Baltimore ahead. Because Kansas City is such that this massive empire that if Baltimore even has a shot, I feel like they deserve to go to two. And again, you know, they don't play in the next couple of weeks or anything like that, but just something interesting to think about.
Yeah. Kansas City, number one, of course. They don't move at all. They're not going to move at all because they play the Raiders and the Bucks, who are extremely hurt, and then the Broncos right after that. It's crazy to see how Mahomes has thrown six touchdowns and has eight interceptions, and they're 6-0. Because it felt like at times during the early days of this dynasty that Mahomes is going to have to do a lot to win games, and now he literally does not have to do jack shit. And I think that's what makes it so scary, is that he's going to start having good games and they're just going to start blowing teams out. Right now, every game that they've played has been kind of close. The biggest margin of victory was 13 against the Saints on Monday Night Football a week and a half ago. Mahomes is going to get it down. And I know he's dealt with injuries to Rishi Rice, but they're going to start throwing bombs to James Worthy. They're going to start running the ball better, especially when Pacheco comes back in a couple of weeks. This Chiefs team is as good as they've ever been, and that's because of their league-best defense who just shut down the Niners. Like, we don't see the Niners get shut down. I know they ended up scoring 18, but it was 12 meaningful time points over the wide majority of three and three-fourth quarters. It's just ridiculous. It really is ridiculous, and it makes me so mad, man, because I want to see them lose. But it's not happening. I got a ton of respect for them.
I just want to mention, just so you know, because what I've done some of the past couple of weeks is when I know I may be mumbling on certain words or parts of the podcast, I'll go back and watch it. You called him James Worthy. I just want to let you know.
Oh, my God. Xavier Worthy. Yeah. I think I've done that.
I mean, we all know. I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, I've done that a few times, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. I think I corrected myself on it once. But when there's... I hate it too when there's like especially with the Raiders when we had Derek Carr, is, oh, David Carr drops back. And the announcers would say at least a couple of times a game. I saw it with a Ian Rappaport tweet yesterday. It's like Kyle Shanahan, but he said Mike Shanahan instead of Kyle Shanahan. I was like, dude, that pissed me off, but I just said the same exact thing. And I know it happens a ton to me. I said St. Louis Cardinals when I meant Arizona Cardinals or whatever over and over again. So it happens. But
oh, yeah.
It shows that we're human. And this isn't an artificial intelligence podcast. These are real life human beings.
Yes.
But moving on, already 40 minutes into the episode, we're going to get into our NBA season preview. Maybe less in depth than the NFL because it's maybe not something we're as passionate about, but still got a lot of stuff to talk about. Starting off with the playoff seeding, 8 teams on each side. We're not doing no bullshit playing because the playing sucks, at least in my opinion. So starting with 8, who is your number 8 seed in the West?
Number 8 in the West is Phoenix. I think it's a great roster. The bench has gotten a little better. That was the big problem last year with injuries, and it's KD and Booker, man. They're going to make the play-in at the very least, right?
Yeah. Number 8 for me, I have the Lakers. Maybe a bit of a downturn this season. I know they've added some pieces, but this team's starting to get a little old, man, and it's tough to ignore. I think the Lakers are number 8. Number 7.
I got Sacramento again winning the play-in. It's a really good roster, just a tough West. That's just how it goes.
Yeah, I was on the same page here. I went with the Kings at number 7 as well. I added DeMar DeRozan, which I think will help with some of that intermediate scoring from non-Fox or Sabonis-type guys. Just not as good as what the Kings teams were maybe 2 years ago. So, on to number 6.
Number 6, I have the Pelicans. When Zion's healthy, they're one of the most dominant teams in basketball. So we're banking on that with a 6 seed here. And like I said, a really good Western Conference this year.
Number 6 for me, call me biased because I probably am. It's the Warriors. I think this team is going to take a step up this year. I think the bench is better. I think the shooting has gotten a lot better. I just think the defense as well, too, is going to thrive. Buddy Hield, I think, is going to be a big hinge on that improvement. Just what he brings kind of seems like a Clay vibe. And when you have a Clay vibe and it's not the Clay Thompson of this past year, I think it's going to help the team out a lot. So even the Warriors at number 6. Number 5.
At number 5, I got Dallas. A lot of returning pieces. I just feel like this is a team that might rest a little more than usual. They played a lot of games last season.
I have the Timberwolves at the number 5 spot. I think the biggest reason why they're not a top 2 or 3 team is losing Kat and throwing in Julius Randle isn't going to be a seamless thing. It's going to take some time to work out. And I think, especially for losing a guy like Kat that you've had there for 10 years now at this point, it feels like it's going to take a little bit for it to work. And I think it will. It's maybe not in October or November, or maybe even December. And I think that's why they're down in the standings a little bit. Number 4.
At 4, I got Memphis, a big riser in this tournament. I just feel like when it's not the off-the-field stuff, if we don't have any suspensions, you have a lot of stars playing together who are very familiar with each other. That's Morant, Triple J, Desmond Bain. If we have a clean season when they're playing a lot of games, they can do this easily.
Number 4 for me is going to be where I slot the Phoenix Suns. This team, their starting lineup is really good. Their bench has gotten better, like you said, and I think that helps boost up the regular season record. Number 3.
Minnesota. I actually like some of their moves because they drafted some really good guards in a draft that didn't have a lot of good players. They got 2 of the best 10 of them. So I don't think they're going to lose as much heat with Mike Conley coming back.
Number 3 for me is going to be where I slot the Dallas Mavericks. I got a lot of belief in this team. I think Luka's always been one of the more underrated players in the league. And he's still a superstar, which is crazy. So give me the Mavs at 3. Number 2.
I got the Nuggets. You know they're pissed after what happened last season. They got Aaron Gordon locked up. I think they can go on another crazy run.
Yeah, I got the Nuggets at number 2. I think they're slightly losing steam. That's why they're not the 1 seed, but still obviously a really good team at the number 2 spot. The number 1 seems to be the same here.
Yeah, OKC. They were the 1 last year. They got even better. it's hard not to think about this one.
Yeah. OKC number one, they got better and they were already the number one seed. So yeah, like you said, pretty easy. Number eight in the East, Skyler, who'd you choose here?
I got the Heat here. I think the difference between Miami team and like the next ones up that they would face, Charlotte, Atlanta, is through the roof. That, like, don't freak out over my order of the East is all I'll say.
Yeah. Obviously, these are always like one or two games apart as well, too. So it's not like it's always super close or super far apart and distinguishable of who's the better team. That's why they play the playoffs, of course. Number eight team for me is going to be the Orlando Magic. I think Paolo is going to make a huge jump this year to be an MVP type level player. Number seven.
At number seven, I got the Bucks. I think they're going to struggle a little bit and possibly another coaching change. But if you have Giannis there, you're going to be okay. Dame Lillard, maybe second year in the system, things can go a little better than how they ended.
Number seven for me is going to be where I slot the Heat. This team I don't think is great, but they're going to make the playoffs. It's the Miami Heat. Number six.
Number six, I got the Pacers. Basically the same spot that they were in last season. I like Halliburton a lot, and they play good defense.
Number six for me is going to be where I slot the Cavs. They just got a lot of pieces, and I think they navigated it well last year at times. I think they're going to do it again this year, being right in the thick of it in the East. Number five.
Yeah, at number five is where I have the Cavs. In the back of my mind doing this, I keep thinking about a possible Donovan Mitchell trade because he's just one of those guys who sends out those cryptic messages about two times every year. But still, the difference between Cleveland and the Heat might be two games. But like you said, it's a playoff team.
Yeah. Number five for me is going to be where I slot the 76ers. They've already dealt with injury. Paul George, Jared McCann, I know, got hurt a little bit as well, too. I've never been a huge believer in these Sixers teams, even when they're really good. I think having a center as your best player is always kind of a tough way to go about it, unless it's a player like Jokic. And Embiid and Jokic. I know a lot of people think he is. I think there's a difference between the two. And 76ers is the number five spot for me. Number four.
At number four, I'm going with Orlando. Everybody on this team plays great defense. They all look for wide open threes. It's kind of like the Warriors of the East almost. And I'm banking on their young guys to get better. So that's why they're four.
Number four for me is going to be where I slot the Milwaukee Bucks. It's weird saying how this team kind of felt like it needs a hiccup in the last past few years. It felt like there was a possible dynasty coming when they first won their ring. And maybe that's just like how we felt as basketball fans seeing, you know, LeBron and the Cavs or LeBron and his kind of dynasty era with the Heat and the Cavs and the Lakers. And what we've seen with the Warriors, of course, as well, too. Maybe we kind of just overreacted, I don't know. But it's been a disappointment the last few years, and I think the Bucks have a decent shot this year to be up there in the top four. Number three.
Number three, I got the Knicks. That's how it goes, right, man? If you can shoot threes and play really good defense in the East, you're going to be a top seed. Not going very well tonight for them, but it is their first time all playing together again. Let's see if they trade for a big man. Obviously,
number three,
you know, they can't shoot like Cat.
Yeah. Number three, I have the Indiana Pacers. I think this team is going to take a big step up from last year. I was a big fan of Halliburton. I've been a big fan of him for a while. And then Siakam for a full season obviously helps. They can kind of change some things over the offseason, which I think is good. And I like this Pacers team a lot, man. I said it a few years ago that I thought Tyrese Halliburton would be good enough to get another star to Indiana. And now they have one in Pascal Siakam. Number two.
I am going to go with Philly at the two spot. Another one I went back and forth on because Embiid likely isn't playing back-to-backs. Luckily, that's not every game. He just has to understand he can't go for the MVP this year. It's a much better overall team, I think. So that's the difference between being the two seed and the eight seed, right? I'm going to bet on Joel Embiid to pass a little more this year, at least when Paul George gets back.
Number two for me is going to be where I slot the Knicks. I like this team a ton. I think they got championship aspirations. Obviously, like you said, not the greatest start tonight, but it is just night one of 82. And their roster is good enough that they can just they got scorers every night. If one guy's down, they can go on to the next guy. And I think that's a very unique ability that this team has in comparison to some of the other squads throughout the entire league. Number one.
Boston Celtics, they're going to go for 60-plus wins again this season. Just watching this game, it's like there's a wide-open, great shooter on every possession. Jaylen Brown hits another three. It's pretty hard to defend these guys. I don't know if Porzingis is even out here tonight. But, man, it's basically the same exact roster. They're going to run it back.
Feels dynastic. And maybe that's just part of, again, like I said with the Bucks, but this team feels the most deep in the league. It's not really close. It feels the most complete in the league, and it's got stars at Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown that are both not ego guys that what we've seen over this past few years from some of these other guys that are trying to compete for a ring. It just it's so smooth right now, not bringing in anybody like as a big part, and I think this team being even better. These guys have all played with each other. There is no surprise element that comes with it, and I think it's just the perfect brand of basketball in today's game right now. So Celtics number one. On to the awards. There's MVP, DPOY, Rookie of the Year, Sixth Man of the Year, Most Improved Player. Please, NFL, MLB added a Most Improved Player award because it was the most fun to do. And then Coach of the Year as well, too. I guess we'll start with the start on the opposite end to switch up the one. Coach of the Year, Skyler, who do you choose?
This is where you try to find your sleeper team. I had Mark Daigneault last year, but I don't really see a comparable team to OKC. So I'm going to go with Orlando's Jamal Mosley. It's another system that cares a lot about defense, so they could definitely shock some teams in the regular season, go on a little stretch like Indiana did last year.
I went with Indiana's head coach. That is Rick Carlisle. I put him at the number three seed in the East, and I think they're probably the most valid team to have their coach get – coach of the year if they do play that good. Most improved player, fun one.
Yeah, I get why Wemby's up there. The Riders love the second year jump, right? And I think Chet being at 6,000 is a bargain for that reason too. But I'm going to go Eastern Conference for this one. Kobe White of the Bulls, an awesome end to the season. His 19 points per game could jump up to over 25 with DeRozan gone, Zach LaVine on the block.
I chose Victor Wembanyama because I think that's how it will go.
Yeah, exactly.
I hate that second-year jump players get the award. I've never been a fan of it. I saw a TikTok of it yesterday where it's like, can we stop doing this? Like, it needs to – we already know Victor Wembanyama is going to be a generational type player. Like, him making that jump isn't unexpected. We need to have it be the most unexpected, most improved player. And I think – a better candidate for me in this situation would be Paolo. I think he's going to make the jump to an MVP type player. Going from 20 points per game to 25, 26. And he's got that triple double ability in him as well too, especially rebounding wise. He reminds me a ton of Jason Tatum. And I think he's going to have even a higher ceiling than what we saw of Tatum. He's a number one overall pick for a reason. This guy's a stud. Sixth man.
I love the odds on the two Timberwolves guys, so I'm going to go with a fan favorite for us, too, Dante DiVincenzo. I mentioned this a little bit earlier, right? Mike Conley, he still has it. He was great in the playoffs, so that probably keeps Dante eligible for the six-man tag all season long, unless there's an injury, and I think Minnesota is going to be way more likely to rely on a guy like Dante than those two rookies, Rob Dillingham, Terrence Shannon. Great preseason, but we know that doesn't really mean anything for a first-year NBA player. So they might get hidden in the rotation for Dante.
I'm on the same page here. I chose Dante DiVincenzo. This is a guy that I was a huge fan of when he was in Milwaukee, when he was at Villanova, when he was with the Warriors. I thought he was a perfect sixth man or seventh man on a championship contending team. And that's exactly what he's going to be on the Minnesota Timberwolves. We've seen him have some fire this year as well too, which is kind of uncharacteristic for him. Yeah. He's kind of been a level-headed guy. I think that fire this year is going to be really cool to see. And he plays good defense. He's got the ability to shoot. He's got the ability to dribble. There's not a lot that he can't do. And I think that's the perfect makeup of a sixth man on a championship contender in the Minnesota Timberwolves. Rookie of the year, maybe a rough one to choose.
Yeah. I think Donovan Klingon of Portland is way too low on the list and will finish top three, but you usually don't win it if you're not a great scorer. So I'm going to stick with Reed Sheppard. I still feel like he's the best shooter in the draft. He's going to be the main focal point, or one of them, of a Rockets team who should be good enough to get in the play-in. But the reason why none of us have talked about Houston yet is because they give up 120 points per game. Luckily for Reed Sheppard, that's not going to matter for this voting.
I went with Dalton Knecht as my rookie of the year. I don't think it's going to be a crazy season for him. Like, we could see the rookie of the year legitimately have like 13.5 mm-hmm. points per game or something like that. Like, we're not going to see a 20-point score, in my opinion. I think Dalton Knecht being a good shooter with LeBron James on his team is going to help a ton. And I think the fact that he's a Laker is going to help a ton as well, too. And he's not playing in Charlotte or, you know, Memphis or something like that. A team that's just not going to get watched.
Not going to be Alex Saar. Yeah.
Like, yeah, there's going to be people watching this team every single night. And I think that's going to help a ton. It helped a ton with guys like Kuzma. And I think we're seeing another guy like that in Dalton. Sure. We're not on those anymore. Defensive player of the year, Skyler, who'd you choose?
I really think it's Wembanyama. Obviously, we're projecting here, right? I know some people may be upset with him with these odds, but it's like we mentioned with the most improved. If you really think he's going to take that second year jump, then why wouldn't he be the favorite? He averaged 4 blocks a game last year as a rookie. So I'm going to trust him to do that with a little better odds here. Not the most improved, but the DPOY. He was the best defensive player last year. He's going to win a lot of these, right?
Yeah. It's Wemby. He talked about it last year when Gobert won it. He said he can have it this year because I'm getting it every year after that. He's a generational type player. What he has the ability to do on the defensive end of the ball is ridiculous. He's still only 20 years old, or maybe even 19. I'm not exactly sure. But I'm so happy to watch him play. And one day I hope he's a Warrior, because he's amazing to watch. And I know this is not a defensive related thing, but I love that he has Chris Paul with him now, because he's mm-hmm. just going to be able to throw it up there. And just think, he doesn't have Jeremy Sochan running the point, which is ridiculous that they tried to do that last year. MVP, who'd you choose?
I've been picking Luka every year for like 5 years. It feels like it just takes a special kind of guard to win MVP in this era. But I'm ready to get hurt again, because I'm picking an even smaller guard, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. He's in the right situation to put up 35 a game because everyone around him is a great passer. And I think if he scores 35.5 points, they should give him the MVP. And the number one seed, obviously, for both of us, right?
I like that. And before I get into my MVP pick, I'll say something about Shai. We were playing Pro-Am last night, and we're playing against Shai, like actual Shai. And we, it's funny. We beat his team. They weren't that good. They were like 5-14. But seeing Shai Gilgeous, and obviously has his face scan and his accessories and stuff. I remember I pickpocketed him once, which is kind of cool. But obviously, I was saying during the prom game, like, I wonder, do we all realize that this guy's making $40 million this year? You know, and it's just crazy to think about. But my MVP. Luka Doncic, a big player that I've been a fan of for a long time. I hope this is the year that he finally gets it. I thought he could have gotten it last year. I thought he could have gotten it the year before that. Mm-hmm. He's the most fun player to watch in the game, in my opinion. And the way that he scores, the way that he just like goes on those crazy spurts, non-Steph-wise, that is, because Steph's always the number one. But Luka's amazing. MVP this year. On to the playoffs. We'll get through these kind of quick because I know we're already about an hour into the show. West first round, you're 1-8. You can just go through your whole first round, actually, if you want.
Okay. So in the Western Conference, I have the 1-seeded Thunder beating the 8-seeded Suns, the 2-seeded Nuggets beating the 7-seeded Kings, the 3-seeded Timberwolves beating the 6-seeded Pelicans, and the only thing off schedule here is 5 Dallas over 4 Memphis, which wouldn't even be considered an upset.
Yeah. For me, number 1 OKC takes down number 8 the Lakers. Number 2 Denver takes down number 7 Sacramento. Number 3 Dallas takes down number 6 Warriors. And then again, kind of an upset, but not really. Number 5 Minnesota takes down number 4 Phoenix. So OKC, Denver, Dallas, Minnesota goes on to round two. On to the East, round one. Who do you have here?
We'll start it off. Number one seeded Boston's not losing to Miami. The crazy one I have here is Milwaukee's going to get the flip off of last year's upset. Number seven, Milwaukee will beat number two, Philly. After that, we got the Knicks beating Indiana. They get revenge, even though I would be rooting for Indiana probably if the series happened again, just because I nailed it last year. And then four, Orlando over five, Cleveland.
East first round for me, I have number one, Boston over number eight, Orlando. Sorry, Magic. Just not going to happen. Number two, Knicks over number seven, Miami. Number three, Indianapolis over number six, Cleveland. And the number four, Milwaukee over number five, Philly. So one, two, three, four moves. On to the Western second round, how does that go for you?
The one-seeded Thunder are going to be moving on. They're beating down number five, Dallas. As I hinted to earlier, I think they're going to be so tired this season. I'll be rooting for Luka. Like I said, I've been picking him MVP every year. I just think they're going to be out of juice, maybe move on from Kyrie next season. And then the other one, Denver is going to get Minnesota. Number two, Denver moving on. We got an OKC-Denver matchup in the Western Conference Finals.
Western second round for me, I have OKC taking the number one spot, of course. They beat number five, Minnesota. And then in the other matchup, I have number three, Dallas, taking down number two, Denver, for an OKC-Dallas Conference Finals. Eastern side.
Number one seeded Boston. It's not that difficult of a matchup here against Orlando. They're a couple years away. Plus, Boston looks like a potential dynasty, right? But I am going to have the Knicks move on. They're my three seed. They beat the seven seeded Bucks. That one should be the best series of this entire round, unless it's Minnesota, Denver. So it's going to be Knicks, Boston, Eastern Conference Finals.
For me in the East, number one seed of Boston takes down number four, Milwaukee. I still think pretty comfortably, not going to lie. Number two, Knicks takes down number three, Indianapolis. So, or Indiana, I guess they're not the Indianapolis, even though they played at Indianapolis. Knicks versus Boston in my Eastern Conference Finals. How does your Western Conference Finals go?
I'm going to have Denver beating OKC. I forgot they have MVPs for these now. So, of course it would be Nikola Jokic, right? I mean, if you're picking Denver, I'm an OKC believer, obviously, this season. I just think Jokic wants one more run.
Yeah. For me, it's number one seeded OKC versus number three, Dallas. I think Dallas wins this series. I think they go back to the finals. And I hate the finals MVP and all these things, it's just so boring. It goes to the best player. Mm-hmm. It's not as interesting as the, you know, World Series MVP or anything like that. So Luka Doncic was Western Conference Finals MVP. On to the Eastern Conference.
Boston, New York. I went back 100 times on this one today. But, I mean, you can't pick against Boston, right? We'll say Jaylen Brown gets this one. Maybe a flip-flop of or I guess a repeat of what happened last season, actually. Boston's going back to the finals. They're going to win maybe 65-plus games this year.
Number one seeded Boston versus number two seeded New York. I know it's a rematch of what's going on tonight, but I'm going to do it. I took the Knicks to win this as a complete shocker. It's just been a crazy year for New York sports, and they just got that vibe around them this year with the Knicks. And I think they kind of got a Mets type vibe to them, even though they're that same, like, you know, scrappy $300 million team, regardless. On to the finals, or I guess my Eastern Conference finals pick here would be Jalen Brunson. But who is your finals pick and who's winning?
I'm going to do it. I hate having repeat matchups because I think we're past that, honestly, but these two teams are going to have to do it one more time before I'm ready to give up on him, because when Denver wins this one in six games, fucking seven games over Boston, Jokic is retiring. He's going to go back to the horses. That's why I did it. I think New York and Minnesota and even OKC come back strong and the league is really balanced, but I think we're due one more repeat before we're ready to get into the expansion era.
Yeah.
So that would be Jokic again, obviously.
My finals is the Knicks versus Dallas. So a bit of a different matchup there, but obviously Dallas was in the finals last year anyways. I take the Knicks in six. Finals MVP a bit more discourse around the Knicks. I think I know Brunson's technically their best player, but I think you can go in a lot of different directions here. And I think I go with Cat as my finals MVP. So I'm claiming the Knicks this year.
I'm just a little worried that he's going to get roasted by New York. Like the minute he has a Shaq and a Fool moment.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, hopefully he figures it out. Maybe it'll top him up. On to the second half, though, an hour into the episode.
Yeah. So there's no official Heisman watch because Genty had a bye. Travis Hunter's been hurt for 2 weeks. But good weeks from the usual suspects. Cam Ward, Dylan Gabriel, your guy Bryson Daly, all playing very well. They're in the top five. So we'll get right into the preview. Some great games. Friday night. It's number 17 Boise at UNLV. The biggest test for Boise and Genty in conference play this year. Should be a good one. On Saturday morning, we'll start it off with an unlikely double-ranked matchup. That's number 12 Notre Dame against number 24 Navy. That one's at JetLife Stadium. And the Army-Navy-Notre Dame love triangle might come down to just one playoff spot because of Boise. So I would love to see Navy win this one. Just make things as crazy as possible. 12:30 on Saturday, some more ranked matchups. It's number 20 Illinois at number 1 Oregon, probably the best defense Oregon's faced in a couple of years. So that's an interesting case for an upset. Another ranked one, number 21 Mizzou, hasn't looked great. They're at number 15 Bama. They really need a get back game. So I feel bad for Mizzou fans that are going to that one. At 4:30, we have what could be the game of the week. It's number 8 LSU and number 14 Texas A&M. If you remember last week on the Hoosier 12, I did say the Aggies would win this one. But that doesn't mean Garrett Nussmeier can't make it a shootout with everyone watching. And us West Coasters at 7:30. We get 5-2 Cincy at 5-2 Colorado. NFL draft fans should be tuning in to watch Shadur do his thing. And that's what we got for college football. Not as crazy as the past couple weeks, but we still got our ranked matchups to look out for.
Yeah. Well, these not as crazy weeks tend to spark the craziest things that happen. So maybe Vandy and Bama part two with different teams, of course, but who knows. On to our bets, Layups Bowl predictions. It was a rough week for us last week. We went 1-4, but that happens sometimes. I had Atlanta -3. They put up a dud and did not win that game, of course. Skyler had New England +5.5. I like this pick as well, too. I probably would have taken it if Skyler didn't, and that didn't hit, unfortunately, either. This week, I have Detroit -11. It's a very big spread in the NFL for a league that tends to have one-score games. I just don't think that Tennessee offense is going to do jack shit on Sunday, and I think Detroit is just going to roll all over them. We saw Buffalo do that exact thing to Tennessee's defense, and I think it just shapes up pretty well for Detroit.
My layup is going to be my team on Friday night that I was just talking about. Number 17, Boise. They're only a -3 at UNLV, which is not really their stadium. It's your stadium. So I don't feel that bad about it, right? Yeah. I mean, come on, man. UNLV gave up like 48 points to Syracuse. I would take Boise -7. We'll see, though.
All right. Is Ashton Genty playing in his future home? Who knows?
That'd be cool.
Anyways, bowl prediction did not go well for me last week due to a game-winning field goal. I had Houston moneyline. Skyler had Detroit over Minnesota. So in here, the game-winning field goal helps, Skyler. This week, I have Orlando over Miami in a basketball game. Tomorrow, I like Orlando. I know I had Orlando below Miami in the season standings, but I think tomorrow they're going to be the better team. This spread's not too wide. I believe it's like 3.5, 4 points, maybe 2.5, but I think Orlando wins this game.
I'm going to go with one guy who I kind of shit on earlier in the NBA preview, but it's the bold prediction. We got to be bold. I'm going to say Joel Embiid scores over 40 points against the Bucks tomorrow night. Paul George is banged up. He hurt his knee pretty bad. We talked about Embiid needs to be willing to pass the ball, but on this night, he's going to go crazy. The line might be 33.5. Probably should be 44.5.
Yeah. That's going to do it, though, for episode 215. Obviously, a lot of content in this one. So this was a bit tiring. Yeah. But next week we'll have – maybe we'll talk a little bit of basketball. Who knows? Definitely talk football. We'll definitely talk the World Series and what's going on there. College football as well, of course. But yeah, there's a lot of good sports over this next week. One of the best sports weeks of the season. It would have been even better if we got a good college football weekend. But we have all four major sports in turn right now, which is really fun to see. So I guess we'll see you guys next week in episode 216.
Hey, let's have a real competitive World Series. Great start to the NBA season. No injuries, and I'll be happy with that. Also, if we lose to the Patriots, I may never speak of the Jets for the rest of the season. Until draft season, of course. Speaking of that, maybe some mock drafts too, because things are getting crazy with the draft order. The Jets have the 5th pick right now. That's crazy. But
they are getting crazy.
All right. Like you said, 216 next week. Let's go, Jets.
Let's go, Jets. Let's go
Dubs tomorrow too. Let's have a great start to the year. Shout out Moses.
Yep. Woody Moses.